This is Curiouser and Curiouser by Brumeyer, a Stargate Atlantis fanfic. It is rated T and no archive warnings apply. It features the relationship Rodney McKay / John Shepard and has the tags Alternate Universe, Alice in Wonderland Fusion, Confinement, First Meetings, Baking, Tea Parties, Alice in Wonderland References, and Dreams. Summary. John's not the Mad Hatter, though he did inherit a tree full of hats. Evan's not the March Hare, but he knows his way around a cream cake. Neither is prepared to have their endless tea party crashed by Rodney, who definitely isn't Alice, but needs their help finding his way out of Wonderland. John was not overly fond of tea. Contrariwise, tea was the only thing he drank most days because they couldn't rightfully call it a tea party without actual tea on the table. The problem, as he saw it, was the inherent weakness of the local tea varieties. It had no depth, no punch to the taste buds. Plus, the loose leaves Evan liked to use sometimes got stuck in John's teeth, and that was never a good look. Thirdly, but no less importantly, the banquet table being in the middle of the forest meant wayward insects often fell into untended cups. John almost swallowed a double-ended swivel stinger bee once, and now he always made sure to check his cup. "Tea cakes," Evan sing-songed, carrying a tray of said cakes to the table from the summer kitchen, "and treacle tarts." The banquet table was already loaded with cakes and cookies and finger sandwiches, but Evan was always making more. The kitchen was his happy place. "No one eats the treacle tarts," John pointed out. Evan shrugged. "Someone will want one someday, and I'll be ready for them." As a direct result of this bit of forward thinking, the local population of Borogoves were unusually docile and plump because Evan tossed the uneaten sweets their way. So was the dormouse Evan had befriended, which was, at that moment, curled up asleep inside one of the teacups. John plucked a chocolate cream cake off the multi-tiered plate and bit it in half. Evan was a compulsive baker, there were no two ways about that, but he was a deft hand at it as well. There were worse people to be stuck with. Evan found a clear space on the table for the plate after shifting some other things around, and stood back to admire his work. It was a large, long table. 20 people could easily fit around it. Twice that if they doubled up and took advantage of laps. And in a perfect world, every empty seat would have had someone in it, eagerly eating what was on offer. Evan clapped his hands together sharply just once. "Fresh cup?" "Fresh cup," John parroted. He pushed up out of the chair he'd been occupying, and moved to the left until Evan clapped again. When John sat in the new chair, flushly upholstered in a vivid shade of green, he was pleased to find a math puzzle written on the white tablecloth. It was his own handwriting, but he didn't remember making it. "Cool." The cream cakes weren't as handy, but now he was in arm's reach of the cucumber sandwiches. He grabbed a handful, checked his teacup for bees, and settled in to work some numbers. John believed in four impossible things every day before breakfast. One, he was no longer a knight. It was something he needed reminding of nearly every day, and it never hurt any less to remember it. Two, he'd been banished by the Queen of Hearts. This was directly related to the first item. To the layman, that might not sound so bad, but it meant John was stuck in the clearing in Tulgi Wood. He couldn't leave and start over somewhere else. Couldn't move on. Three, he was now best friends with a compulsive baker and a dormouse who spent most of its time sleeping off the consumption of tea cakes and treacle tarts. Four, he lived inside a tree. To be fair, it was well appointed for a tree. Whoever the previous occupant had been, they'd made it very comfortable. Didn't stop John feeling, every so often, like a squirrel. It wasn't a very uplifting list, truth be told, but John ran through it every morning when he woke up in his treehouse to make sure he stayed rooted in the now, and not the then. The real problem for John was the sameness of every day. There was always tea, always cakes, always the banquet table surrounded by shady trees. He'd work on math puzzles or practice hat tricks with the hats that had been left in the treehouse for him to find when he'd first moved in. He'd sit and brood over the past and what he'd lost, and how he wouldn't have done anything differently if given the chance. If only he could get away, out of sight of the table in the summer kitchen, and Evan's painfully cheerful facade. If wishes were horses, beggars would ride. But they weren't, so they didn't, and that was just logic. "Do you ever want more than this?" John asked Evan over a frankly delicious apple tart. "If wishes were fishes," Evan said with a shrug. "Did you taste that crust? It's my flakiest so far." He took a bite himself, but beneath the satisfaction, like a second skin, John could sense Evan's unhappiness. They were like mismatched socks. Outwardly very different, but stuck in the same place for roughly the same spurious reasons. Evan hid his pain well. "Dormouse, try this." He scooped the animal out of the teacup it was sleeping in, waking it up. It eagerly ate a paw's worth of apple tart crust, and then fell back asleep in Evan's palm. "Feed your head," John said solemnly, "or fall prey to what the dormouse said." "That's not how it goes," Evan replied mildly. "It doesn't matter." When every day was the same, nothing mattered. And then one day, something happened that mattered quite a lot. John lounged in the purple chair, one leg over the arm, and flipped the pork pie hat in the air over and over, achieving greater and greater height with each flip. He was well practiced, but he fumbled the last flip, and the hat plunked down on his head at the same moment that someone finally appeared through the trees. "Finally! Actual people! I was getting pretty damn tired of cats talking in rhymes and unnecessarily rude snapdragons and other scientific improbabilities. Oh, hey, are those chocolate cakes? Is there citrus in them? You know what? I don't care. None of this is probably real anyway." John could only stare at the man, who had broad shoulders and blue eyes and wouldn't stop talking. He sat down at the far end of the table and started helping himself to a plate of chocolate cream cakes. There hadn't been another person through Tugly Wood for the entirety of John's banishment. "Oh my god, these are amazing. Did you make these? Is this some kind of bakery? Because I wouldn't think you'd get much traffic through here. I don't suppose you have any coffee."
"Just tea."
"Oh, well, I suppose it's better than nothing." The guy reached for the nearest teapot, but when he tried to pour it, nothing came out. He took the lid off and looked inside. "Well, of course. There's a dead rodent in here. That's clearly a health hazard."
"He's just napping," John said helpfully.
"A guest!" Evan emerged from the summer kitchen with a platter full of dingberry scones and a wide grin. "How wonderful! Would you like a scone? There's freshly churned sweet butter to go with them."
"There's crumbs in the butter," John pointed out.
"Easily managed." Evan picked up the butter crockery, scooped off the top layer with the spreading knife, and threw the crummy butter carelessly over his shoulder. "Good as new."
"Who are you people?"
the new guy asked warily, while at the same time reaching for the scones.
"I'm Evan, head baker for the Mad Hatter's Tea Party," Evan said proudly, as if he hadn't been demoted.
"Dr. Rodney McKay, double PhD.
He slathered the butter on the scone he'd procured.
"Mad Hatter? And I suppose he's the Hatter in question?"
He gestured at John with his scone.
"The Hatter doesn't live here anymore. I'm John."
"John, right.
You know Alice in Wonderland is just a story, right? Not a guideline for whatever this is."
John leaned forward on the table.
"Does this look like a story to you?"
"No, this looks like a hallucination brought on by a heretofore undiagnosed brain tumor,"
Rodney replied promptly.
Evan clapped his hands. "Fresh cup."
"Fresh cup," John echoed, and made it sound like a challenge. He and Evan moved around the table, and after a moment, so did Rodney, carrying his plate of cakes and the half-eaten scone with him. John chose a new seat closer to their guest. Rodney wasn't a Wonderlander, which begged the question. And questions should never be left begging. It was unseemly.
"Where are you from?"
"I'm from Ontario, where the laws of physics don't try to be what they're not."
"Ontario." It sounded exotic. Evan poured a cup of tea and passed it around to Rodney.
"What's it like?"
"Normal. Inanimate objects don't talk in riddles. Eating mushrooms might expand your mind, but they don't expand your body. And it's almost impossible to get lost there."
Normal sounded boring. Wonderland had faults, monarchy being the biggest of them, but John loved it there. It was unpredictable and bright and full of the wonders it had been named for, and he missed being out there in it as a knight, formerly employed.
"How'd you get here?" John asked.
"I'd rather not discuss that, if you don't mind."
Rodney's face turned red, and he crammed another cake into his mouth.
"Solitary as an oyster," Evan remarked. "Oh, oysters, come and walk with us."
Rodney rolled his eyes.
"Yes, yes, very funny. Look, this has been fun and all, and the food is good, but I need to get out of here.
The creepy cat pointed me in this direction. Said something about knocking on the right door.
John shared a look with Evan. If Cheshire had sent Ronnie to their banquet table, there had to be a reason beyond just getting his fill of cream cakes.
Hall of doors, Evan said. Has to be. You know where I can find it? Ronnie asked.
I need to get back to my work. It's very important, life-changing stuff.
We can point you in the right direction, which isn't necessarily right, since it's left, Evan said.
Ronnie sighed.
Don't any of you talk normal?
John wasn't ready to send Ronnie on his way. It had been far too long since he'd seen a face other than Evan's. Not that there was anything wrong with Evan's face. It was merely tiringly familiar.
You'll have to stay the night, Evan said. It's too late to start out now.
John hadn't been aware of the passage of time, but now he could see the shadows were growing long. The Borogoves would be coming soon for their nightly feeding.
You can stay at my place, John said, gesturing to the tree. I'll bunk in with Evan.
The summer kitchen wouldn't be as comfortable, especially since there was only one real bed there, but his own place wasn't big enough for two. Something told him Rodney wouldn't do well sleeping on the ground.
Oh, you sure I can't get there before dark?
There was a loud, snarling growl from the darkening wood. Borogoves were getting out grave.
Rodney's eyes went wide as tea saucers. Or I could stay. Staying sounds good.
The paper lanterns that hung up the trees surrounding the banquet table started to glow, and Evan hopped out of his seat.
I'll get the savory pies.
John sat astride his faithful steed, Guinevere, patrolling the borders of the Forest of Wabe. There had been more frequent incursions by spades and aces, and so far there had been no intel on the reason why the queen was sending her suits so far afield.
A night during the day? How contrary.
Guinevere reared up when the cat appeared in front of them, hanging upside down from a tree branch by his tail.
John scowled. I don't have time to chat, Cheshire.
All the world's a dream, and all the men and women merely figments. They have their vagaries and their whims, so you see, you have all the time in the world.
Everything vanished. The wood, Guinevere, all of it. And there was just John and Cheshire in a swirling, shifting void that showed every shade of blue in the spectrum. John remembered he wasn't a knight anymore, and felt the loss of it like a sore through the chest.
Choke on a hairball, John said crossly, and get out of my head.
It's time for your unbanishment, Johnny boy.
Cheshire looked delicately at one paw, the stripes on his shaggy gray fur shifting subtly with each dart of his tongue.
I've sent you the key. Unlock the door.
Rodney?
He's not legendary, it's true, but he'll do for you. You don't have to thank me now, but you will. And if you don't, that means you rejected my gift, which would make you far more dim-witted than a jub-jub bird.
John bristled at the criticism. I don't understand.
Cheshire studied him with a gimlet eye, the tip of his tail flicking back and forth.
You will. Or you won't. My advice? Don't be an idiot, full of sound and fury and tea cakes.
John didn't know much about Cheshire. There were a lot of rumors, of course. Stories, mostly. But if the cat was trying to bestow a gift on John, he'd do well to take it. Especially if he was serious about the unbanishment. Could he finally escape Tolgi Wood?
Follow your heart, Cheshire said. If you still have one.
He grinned and winked, and left John alone in the void.
Think that I shall never see a poem lovely as a tree, John mused to himself during morning calisthenics.
He couldn't take his eyes off his treehouse. The sun hadn't fully awakened, merely yawning and stretching and nodding to the moon in passing, but John hadn't been able to sleep with Evan's knobby knees enjoying a close relationship with his kidney. The offer to share the bed in the summer kitchen had been well-intentioned, but they were both accustomed to sleeping alone, and he couldn't stop thinking about Rodney. Over savory pies and dandelion wine the night before, Rodney had told them tales of his faraway land and the people who lived there. Many more people than had ever populated Wonderland City, even in its heyday. John learned about cars, which had replaced horses, and aeroplanes that gave people the ability to fly like birds. There were telling phones that allowed people to talk to each other even when separated by great distances, and a web of information that spanned Rodney's entire world and was available to anyone who needed it. The number of spiders it must have taken to spin was unimaginable. Ontario sounded wondrous after all,
even without the rocking horseflies and giant grassy chessboards and talking cats. Rodney stumbled out of the treehouse, rubbing his eyes and yawning.
Are you sure there's no coffee?
We only have coffee and scones, Evan called out, a tray in one hand and a battered aluminum coffee kettle in the other.
Since when do we have coffee? John wanted to know.
I've been experimenting, Evan replied breezily. John slipped back into his house to get changed and cleaned up. He tried not to notice how rumpled his bedsheets were. When he joined the others for breakfast, Ronnie was alternately sipping the coffee and peering confusedly into the cup.
He can't decide if he likes it, Evan said. Contrawise, he won't stop drinking it.
Somehow it's terrible and delicious all at the same time. Ronnie took another sip. My taste buds are all tangled up.
John helped himself to a cup, and yeah, he could taste it. Nutty and earthy, bitter and sweet, rich and light, all at the same time. It definitely had more kick than the tea. He couldn't help feeling a little betrayed that Evan had only brought it out for company.
So what's your story? Rodney asked around a mouthful of scones.
He was looking across the table at John.
I think I did all the talking yesterday.
You know the restricted section of the library, where they keep the books under lock and key?
That's where my story is.
John smirked at him.
Evan rolled his eyes. He was a knight for the White Queen.
That's not anyone's business, John snapped at him.
A knight?
Ronnie didn't look convinced.
Sure. And I suppose the baker was a bishop?
Turnabout was fair play, as far as John was concerned.
The Queen of Hearts asked for some tarts in her imperious ways. The Knave of Hearts, he baked those tarts, gave them all away. The knave was saved from an early grave thanks to...
That's inaccurate and you know it, Evan interrupted. His tone was mild, but his eyes were snapping blue sparks.
It was close enough to the truth.
If the Queen of Diamonds hadn't interceded on Evan's behalf, the Queen of Hearts would have separated his head from his body.
I'm sorry I asked, Ronnie muttered.
John and Evan continued to glare at each other until Evan clapped his hands.
Fresh cup?
Fresh cup, John echoed, nodding his head. They switched up their places at the table and left their unhappy truths in their old seats. All they had was each other, and squabbling wasn't helpful. As if sensing the tension in the air, the Dormouse tipped out of his teacup and scurried up Evan's arm, curling up on his shoulder.
I have to get to that hall of doors you mentioned yesterday, Rodney said. Can you give me directions, preferably ones that don't involve riddles, rhymes, or poetry?
We'll take you, John said. In his dream, Cheshire had told him he was unbanished. He wanted to see if that was true. Evan stared at him.
We will?
Believing one impossible thing today. We're leaving Tulgey Wood. The clearing looked strange and empty, the banquet table cleared and cleaned, the linens washed and packed away. The hanging lanterns were still up, but now they seemed abandoned instead of festive. John had taken his scant few personal items out of the treehouse and packed them into a satchel he wore over one shoulder. Maybe someone else would move in now that he was gone. It wasn't a bad place to lay one's head if one had nowhere else to go.
What if you're wrong? Evan asked softly.
He was standing in front of the summer kitchen, the ovens empty and cold. He'd only packed his book of recipes in the Dormouse, who was sleeping in his shirt pocket.
If I'm wrong, we go on like we always have. If I'm right, we can find something new. Do something new.
John was more than ready to leave the sameness of Tulgey Wood behind. He wanted things to change. Wanted things to be new and fresh and different. Maybe he wanted something he couldn't find in Wonderland.
Rodney sighed impatiently. Look, I know this is a moment for you or whatever, but I'd really like to get on with things if you don't mind. I have important work to get back to, and Archimedes might still be lost, and...
Who's Archimedes? Evan asked.
My cat.
The abashed expression on his face told the story of how he'd arrived in Wonderland. He'd been chasing after his wayward cat. There was no reason that should have made John go all soft inside like warm treacle, but it did.
Time waits for no man, John said, because time is a bastard. Let's go.
They left the clearing shoulder to shoulder to shoulder, and John couldn't remember the last time his heart had beat so fast, or he had felt such anticipation. In the first days of his banishment, if he tried to walk out into the woods from one end of the clearing, he'd just walk back in on the opposite side. It had been a long time since he tried to escape, and a big part of him was afraid nothing had changed. John held his breath as he took the first step beyond, and his second, and his third.
Oh, Frabjous Day, Evan said reverently. John could feel a smile spreading across his face, real and genuine for the first time in a very long time. He turned that grin on Rodney. We're out. He had the craziest urge to kiss Rodney, but even in Wonderland it was inadvisable to lay your lips on a stranger and make promises that might not be kept. So where do we go? Rodney asked. Anywhere we want, John replied. Maybe even the far-off city of Ontario. John believed four impossible things every day. One, he was a knight. His title had been returned, though he was no longer in active service to the White Queen. Two, he traveled through the Looking Glass to a world he never could have imagined in his wildest imaginings. Three, he was best friends with a sleek orange cat named Archimedes. Four, he had found a true friend, life partner, and brilliantly sexy lover, all in the person of Dr. Rodney McKay, double PhD. And every day was a new adventure. ¶¶